It's Friday, the beginning of another weekend, but we have a show for you this afternoon. This is The Pulse, here on Joy News from Accra and around the world. You're welcome. My name is Elton Brogy. And this afternoon, we put a spotlight on non-communicable diseases, as the World Health Organization affirmed that about half of all deaths in Ghana are caused by the NCDs. Today, we have all the experts who help us address this problem that is now assuming crisis proportion. Also, finally, HIV, TB, and malaria drugs stuck at the port finally cleared and will be presented to the Global Fund shortly. We are in Tema for the ceremony and also bring you all the backstories. We also bring you all the day's top stories, including the upcoming parliamentary primaries for the MPP in the Ajosso constituency, where we are now learning that the former MP Kwabena Owusu-Adeyemi has decided to contest the Ajosso seat as an independent candidate. The Pulse is brought to you by Global Communities Loop, Affordable Safe Sanitation for All. We are live on DSTV on channel 421, GoTV 125. You can also follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and myjoyonline.com for these and more. Stay on. We are back, and this is a health-induced, you know, program this afternoon we have for you. Now, let's start from Tema, because the Global Fund is this afternoon taking delivery of medical supplies shipped to Ghana to support the country's treatment of HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria. The drugs have been stuck at the port, that's the Kotoka International Airport and Tema Harbor, for almost a year as government haggles with the Global Fund over the import duties at $3.6 million. So after months of pressure from the media, civil society groups, the Ghana Revenue Authority is today clearing the medical supplies. Let me take you live where a ceremony is underway to hand over the drugs to the Global Fund and its partners.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Bossy.
I bring you greetings from the Commissioner General and Management of Ghana Revenue Authority and wish you all a good afternoon in this very hot sun, and thank you for joining us today as we, under the auspices of the Ministry of Finance, hand over the medical supplies to the Ministry of Health. Today is a significant day in our ongoing efforts to join hands with the Ministry of Health to improve access to healthcare in Ghana. This brief ceremony represents partnership, progress, and most importantly, hope for those who need it the most. It is an honor to stand before you as we all witness the handing over ceremony of essential pharmaceutical products, which for some time now have been detained at the port to the Ministry of Health. Ladies and gentlemen, you remember that it was recently reported in the media that the Global Fund called for government intervention to pay charges and fees to clear a consignment of healthcare products. I am pleased to report that the first batch of the consignment has been cleared and is being released to the Ministry of Health for distribution to various health centers across the country. These drugs are vital for the survival of our fellow citizens, and I am glad that they are now in the hands of those who will put them to very good use. The pharmaceuticals, I believe, will be used to improve the health and well-being of our sisters and brothers who depend on them to survive. On behalf of the Commissioner General, may I use this opportunity to urge all ministries, departments, and government agencies to collaborate with the GRA and take advantage of the new exemption law to clear goods that are eligible under the law. This will help in avoiding charges, penalties, and demurrage at the port. The consignment we are here to hand over were eligible for exemption. However, there were some outstanding liabilities for third-party clearance, fees, charges, rent, demurrage, and other penalties on the goods at the port, which led to their being kept here at the port. As I have said before, it is the priority of the GRA to engage with stakeholders from all sectors to ensure that the authority is serving the needs of our clients, not only with integrity and fairness, but also with empathy. We will continue the drive to achieve the nation's revenue mobilization goals with empathy, designed to ensure that our clients understand our processes. This stance reiterates the authority's focus on putting the customer first in all our dealings. We encourage all persons in the tax chain to reach out to us for assistance when they need help, especially as they fulfill their tax obligations. This is the only way we will forge a meaningful partnership that will thrive. We must all contribute to ensuring that a conducive atmosphere is created to help you pay the taxes due. As we conclude, let's all reiterate our mutual dedication to ensuring the health and welfare of all individuals, regardless of their geographic location or socio-economic status. Let us take inspiration from today's event and continue our pursuit towards creating a world where everyone has equal access to the health care they need and are entitled to. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
That's when you introduced me. I need it because I'm here to share a good news. And so you have to welcome me. Chief Director of the Ministry of Health, the Deputy Commissioner, Ghana Revenue Authority Customs, the Sector Commander of the Reefer Court, ladies and gentlemen, our friends from the media, present, good afternoon to you all. On behalf of the Honorable Minister of Finance, who is on an equally important engagement, I welcome you all and express my sincere gratitude to you for making time to be here for the handings over ceremony of the donated pharmaceutical supplies from Global Fund containing anti-HIV, TB, malaria medicines, and units, which regrettably have been in our port for some time now. Ladies and gentlemen, for your information, not all taxes are allowed under the Exemptions Act. In this respect, special provision of 40 million Ghana cedis was made by the Ministry of Finance to cover transnational taxes, that is, AU and ECOWAS levies. What remained outstanding to be settled was the associated third-party charges, which the donors, per our earlier understanding, had committed to take up. Unfortunately, upon arrival of the consignment at the port, the associated charges could not be paid, and this information was also not communicated to the Ministry of Finance on time. Coupled with this, our investigations also confirmed that many of the players in the health delivery chain still do not understand the exemptions arrangement, hence the delays in the clearing of consignments at the port. Upon establishing these facts, the Ministry of Finance coordinated with Ministry of Health, Ghana Revenue Authority, Ghana Ports and Harbors Authority, NIB, and other governmental agencies came together to ensure that the situation was resolved as soon as possible. Going forward, to ensure that such an incident does not recur, an intergovernmental committee is being set up comprising of representatives, Ministry of Finance, Ministry of Health, Ghana Ports and Harbors Authority, and Ghana Revenue Authority. The committee will work together to address such matters should they come up, to ensure their swift resolution. The Ministry of Finance will continue to organize sensitization workshops to bridge the knowledge gap of our stakeholders. To our development partners, we are immensely grateful for your continued support, and we hope that this intervention reassures you that your support is valued and is making Ghana great. The impact is also very, very good for us. In concluding, ladies and gentlemen, permit me to once again add my voice to the press release issued by the Ministry of Health to reassure our stakeholders and the general public that the challenges associated with clearing of Ministry of Health medicines and other commodities from the Tema port and other points of entry have been conclusively and completely resolved by the government. This afternoon's function is to symbolically hand over the first batch of containers to the Ministry of Health and the Ghana Health Service Authority. Ghana Health Service. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you very much for your attention and God bless us all.
And then on what relates to the Ministry of Health.
Honourable Minister Designate, welcome all of you to this very, very important but brief ceremony. I recognize the presence of the Director representing the Honourable Minister of Finance. I also recognize the presence of our officials from Ghana Revenue Authority Customs Division, and I acknowledge the presence of all those who have contributed for us to reach where we are today as far as these local containers are concerned. I usually don't like saying all protocol observed, because the last time I said all protocol observed, I realized some people went in for their nose mask. And so let me say that all protocol observed minus COVID-19 protocols. I would want to express our sincere gratitude to the Minister of Finance and all the officials who have contributed to the resolution of this serious national problem. Our sincere gratitude goes to the Honorable Minister of State, Honorable Abuna, and all the officials from that ministry and our officers from the Ghana Revenue Authority Customs Division. For the avoidance of doubt, let them state that today we are here to take delivery of about 14 containers of the about 182 containers that are locked up here at the port. I am informed that the total cost of clearing these containers is within the neighborhood of 17 million Ghana cedis. Now let me state that from January to April 2024, there have been about 34 shipments to the Kontaka International Airport, as well as the Tema port.
I'm getting from this one from the side, so let me take.
Now, the recent shipment of the antiretroviral drugs, about 9 containers arrived at the Tema port on 7th April 2024. And the clearing process is likely to be completed with delivery to the warehouse expected shortly, not later than 19th April 2024. Let me state emphatically that so far, 267 containers out of the 435 containers of Global Farm Commodities have been cleared from the port. They include bed nets, antiretroviral medicines, malaria medicines, and injections, as well as TB medicines for the tree vegetable program under the Global Fund. We have about 168 more containers left to be cleared at an estimated cost of approximately 17 million Ghana cedis. And this includes non-medicine commodities like bed nets and rapid diagnostic tests. Today, as we have already been told, 14 containers of health commodities, comprising 10 containers of malaria rapid diagnostic tests, one container of malaria injection, and three containers of malaria medicine will be delivered to the Ministry of Health for onwards transmission to the warehouse. Acknowledging that the investment in the health requires a multi-support, both financial and technical, we pray and hope that the Minister of Finance and its agencies, like the Ghana Revenue Authority, the Customs Division, as well as the general public, will continue to support our ministry, that is the Minister of Health, in delivering on its mandate of ensuring access to quality health care for the people of Ghana. Let me state, for the avoidance of doubt, that we have read through the media that Global Fund has suspended delivery of vaccines and medicines to Ghana. This is false. It is not true. Global Fund has not suspended its support to the good people of Ghana, and Global Fund has no intention of suspending support to the good people of Ghana. We want to thank you so much for the support that you have given us throughout the year. We hope that going forward, the media, you will support us in our desire to deliver on our mandate. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
Thank you very much, sir. We started with that.
And this is a pause here on Joy News, and those visuals coming to you live from the Tema Harbor, where the Ministry of Health, the Ghana Revenue Authority, and of course the Global Fund, they've been involved in the clearing of some containers or containing some medical, you know, supplies that were donated by the Global Fund to Ghana. Let me give you a little background to this. So last year, the Global Fund, that is a non-government organization based in the United States of America, dedicated to helping developing countries with essential drugs, donated over 435 containers full of drugs for the treatment of HIV, for tuberculosis, and malaria. When the containers arrived in the country, governments, as part of the agreement, Global Fund was expected to make some money available for the payment of duties to cover the containers. And at the time, the calculation ended the figure at $400,000. Now, later, the Ghana Revenue Authority brought up some other obligations that Global Fund was expected to meet. And that included some levies and taxes imposed on importation of anything into the country that will go to some transnational, you know, bodies like ECOWAS, the EU, and the rest. So when the drugs, according to the Ministry of Health, came into the country, the Ministry of Health paid 40 million Ghana cedis to cover the transnational taxes and levies. Now, the Global Fund was also expected to pay associated taxes, and that amounted to $3.6 million. The Global Fund says that it was not in a position to cough up such amount, knowing very well that the drugs were actually donation to the people of Ghana for free. And that has been the back and forth from last year up until now, after sustained media advocacy on this matter. The GRA new boss promised that by the end of this week, she was going to make sure that they cleared the containers at the Temapo. And those were the visuals we brought you. Now, currently, there are 185 containers still locked up at the Tema port and the Kotoka International Port. What they've been able to do today is to clear only 14 containers. And these are mostly malaria drugs that they've cleared, leaving 185 more containers, you know, stuck at the Tema port and the Kofanoch and the Kotoka International Airport. The way forward, according to the Ministry of Health, is that government has set up an interministerial committee made up of the Ministry of Finance, the Ministry of Health, the Ghana Ports and Harbors Authority, and the Ghana Revenue Authority. And their task is to draw up a roadmap to permanently address this matter so that in the future, when such donations come to the country belonging to the people of Ghana, there should be seamless exercise to have them cleared. But even as they have put together this intergovernmental, you know, body, there are 182 more containers stuck at the Tema port and the Kotoka International Airport waiting to be cleared. And that is the information we have. Earlier, we reported that the Global Fund had threatened that we're not going to supply Ghana with more drugs until the ones they have provided are cleared. The Ministry Chief Director is denying this claim, but that is what the information we got from the Ministry. Let me take you live to the Tema port where my colleague Kwame Yanka is standing. But let me bring you in now, Kwame. So, I mean, I heard everything. Only 14 containers were cleared today. Is that the case?
So this is the first step for which the remaining containers will be cleared, because this could be seen as an important step, having waited for close to a year to have all these containers being stuck here at the Tema port, with the which content being needed at the various health facilities to take care of malaria, HIV/AIDS, and then tuberculosis.
185 more yet to be cleared. Earlier, we were told that government was going to clear 20. How come only 14 were cleared today?
Well, so this fell short of the number, but then the reason for the six not being able to be cleared today wasn't made known. But then we believe at the appropriate time, since we've been made aware that today marks the beginning of the clearance, we believe the remaining ones will be cleared as the days go by.
So again, so the 182 more stuck at the port, all of them at the Tema port or some at the Kotoka International Airport. And what is the plan, according to authorities, to clear the 185 more?
Okay, so during the speech of the chief director at the Ministry of Health, in the person of Alhaji Hafiz Adam, he said that these containers were coming in into the country from the into the country through the Tema port as well as the Kotoka International Airport.
Right.
So we believe that these two points of entry have been the receiving point, I should say, for these medical supplies needed in the country.
Right. So in terms of the 14 that were cleared today, handed to whom?
Okay, so it's been handed to the Ministry of Health and then the Ghana Health Service for the onward distribution to the various health facilities for to be put to use.
Kwame, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. So as we speak, they are in the process of loading them to the regional medical store. Is that the next phase?
Okay, exactly, Elton. So right behind me were low bed containers container trucks loading these medical supplies under the guidance of Ghana Health Service and the Ministry of Health to the various stores for onwards distribution.
All right, thank you very much, Kwame Yanka. He is our Tema regional correspondent, bringing us the latest on the clearing of these drugs that have been stationed, or if you like, embargoed at the Tema port. Now, let me bring in Ernest Amwabene Austin. He is one of key individuals in the health sector, non-governmental organizations that have been championing intervention in this area to have those cleared. And he had indicated that we're going to go on a demonstration next week if this was not done. Today, there's been some kind of a movement on this matter. Mr. Marvin, you're welcome to the Pulse here on Joy News.
Yes, sir.
Right, so we were promised 20.
14. Thank you very much and a very good afternoon to you.
Yes, and it's a pleasure to have you here. We were promised 20 to be cleared today. Only 14, leaving 182 more stuck at the Tema and the Kotoka International Airport. At least this is a giant step, isn't it?
Well, thank you very much. First and foremost, we welcome this particular development.
The connection to Mr. Mwabin not really the best. Yes. Yeah. I think the connection to Mr. Mwabin is not the best. We'll try and reconnect with him so we can help. So, Mr. Mwabin, you can go ahead. We lost you briefly.
Okay, so I was making the point that we welcome this development. You described it as a giant step, and I said I was not sure that it was a giant one. But the most important thing is that we want these communities cleared, and the process has started. So we are very happy, and we welcome this development.
All right, so again, we still have to contend with 182 more at the Tema and the Kotoka International Airport. But more instructively is the pronouncement that when the containers came in, the Ministry of Health paid 40 million Ghana cedis for transnational taxes and levies. And the Global Fund was supposed to also meet some obligations. What is your understanding of how this worked? Whether or not the entire blame cannot be put on the government of Ghana, and that Global Fund should also take some of the blame.
Okay, thank you very much. So as we have indicated, normally when the Global Fund makes such shipments, they add what they call the PSM costs. That's the procurement supply management costs. Mm. And it covers freights and then other third party charges at the ports. What happened in this specific case that we are dealing with is that when the commodities were sent, the Global Fund made available those funds, all right. But then it came at a time when we had increased our port levies and charges, number one. Number two, there was a waiver that we required for ECOWAS, AU, and COVID-19. Parliament needed to waive off those taxes and levies. But then that was not happening. So the Global Fund was asked to pay. And they said, no, they don't pay those taxes in all the countries where they ship commodities. So if anything at all, government needed to get a waiver from Parliament so that the goods will be cleared. Because in the past, this has never been an issue. Mm. So the Global Fund did not understand why it was an issue this time. So that was exactly the situation.
And then the way forward, as announced by the Ministry of Health and, of course, the Ghana Revenue Authority, is that government has put together an inter-ministerial team made up of the Ministry of Finance, the Ministry of Health, representatives from the Ghana Ports and Harbors Authority and the Ghana Revenue Authority to lay out a roadmap to deal with this in the future. What would be your recommendation?
Yes, what I would say first and foremost is that kind of tripartite arrangement should include the CCM, that's the Country Coordinating Mechanism of the Global Fund, because we are very important stakeholders in this whole matter, and so we should be part of that particular arrangement. But like we have always said, we are still going to go ahead and send our petition to the presidency, because we believe that this shouldn't have happened in the first place. So the arrangements that the GRA and the ministry say they want to put together, we want to be sure that indeed we'll follow through with it so that there will be a lasting solution. Mm. One of the key solutions that we require is a blanket waiver. Because in the past, this has been operated before and it didn't generate any problem. So we can go back to that particular one so that it will not cover just Global Fund donated items, but indeed items from all donor agencies as well.
And governments and all those involved had to put together this media program to tell the whole country that indeed we are being responsive. There are still 185 more locked up. What do you expect should be done going forward? That we don't have to revisit this matter and say that the drugs are still there.
Yes, so we made a request for the media coverage, and we are very happy that it complied with that request. At least it brings some transparency into the whole process. At least the media has seen the first consignment come out. We would like to see this as a symbolic gesture because the GRA Commissioner General explained that there are some processes that they need to go through to make sure that they get the communities, all of them, out. And she initially gave us 14 days. And we said the 14 days was too much. But she also explained that she will do her best to see how best they can reduce the number of days. So the 14 days are not yet up. And we would like to believe that by the time we exhaust the 14 days, all the commodities would have come out.
And I'm guessing that your protest next week is off based on the latest development.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. The protest may take a different form, not like initially we intended. Our initial plan was to mobilize all our NGOs in the 16 regions so that simultaneously we could have demonstration all over the country. But now that at least there has been this compliance, our petition will still go, but then it might take a different form. So we are going to meet later in the day, and then we decide on the way forward. But our petition will certainly go, because we don't like this happening again.
My final question will be, knowing very well that there's timeliness in all of this. These drugs should have been in the market by now. It came in the country last year. We're in 2024. The vibe we are getting that some of them may expire in 2025. The long process to get the drug to the end user can take between 3 and 6 months. The concern with the efficacy of the drugs and expiration, how concerned should we be regarding this area?
Okay, so unless you are referring to the markets as health facilities, right. These products are not meant for the literal market. These facilities, these are meant for health facilities. They are not for sale in pharmacies. They are not for sale anywhere.
Absolutely.
They are meant purely for the health facilities. Then one of the things we decided is that we are going to write to the Ghana Health Service by Monday. We'd like them to share with us their deployment strategy so that within the shortest time possible, maximum 2 weeks, these drugs should be at health facilities across all the country. So we are going to officially write to the Ghana Health Service and ask them to share with us their deployment plan so that these communities can leave the central medical stores as early as possible.
And again, we've been told by the Food and Drugs Authority that they also do their own independent check to establish the suitability of the drugs for the end user. Wait, that it's been there for a year, it's been exposed to all manner of things, you know.
Yes, it's one of the demands we've made. So we are very happy that the FDA is also coming in to ensure that the wholesomeness of these commodities are actually verified and validated before it gets into the health facilities. So again, that is welcome news. And let me take this opportunity to thank the media. You have done so well carrying this message far and wide and necessitating and eliciting the kind of action that we have. So we are very grateful to you, the media, for following this story.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Marvin Austin. He is with the non-governmental organizations that are working in the health sector, and they've been at the forefront of ensuring that the containers are cleared for the use of those that the drugs are meant for. This is a pause here on Joy News with me, Elton Brobe. We'll take a short break. When we come back, non-communicable diseases and the danger therein. We have all the details for you. Brobe, you're welcome back. Now, I told you earlier on that this Friday is just a health pause, and that's exactly what we'll be doing from now till we sign off. Now, according to the World Health Organization, almost half of all deaths in Ghana are as a result of non-communicable diseases, hypertension, diabetes, stroke, heart attacks, and chronic respiratory diseases. This makes NCDs the scariest, if you like, diseases for anyone living in Ghana. Luckily, though, we have the power to keep it in check or under control, because the biggest source of the problem comes from our poor eating habits, lifestyle, and the biggest one, ignorance. So this afternoon, we've put the experts together as part of the year-long campaign by Joy News, led by our health desk, to help bring NCDs under control. They are with us in the studio and via our virtual platform, Zoom, to first of all let you know what you are doing wrong and predisposing you to it and what you can do to reverse it. Let's have some facts here. And so for top 10 conditions by volume and cost, we have pregnancy and delivery, hypertension, cardiovascular complications and diabetes, digestive tract, respiratory tract, malaria. We have ear, eye, and oral cavity, muscle, or skeletal system. We have others. I mean, anemia, skin, what you can think of. These are the 10 conditions that we put together. 43% of all deaths in Ghana is caused by non-communicable diseases. That's a look at the NCD in Ghana. So that's almost half of the reported deaths in Ghana caused by NCD. And that, for me, is a pandemic. And, I mean, we go on, we have more on this matter. And this is the source of this is the World Health Organization. And so these are the facts that are available to us. We have leading diseases, heart diseases, stroke, cancer, respiratory diseases, diabetes as well. So these are the top, some of the leading causes, and again, from the World Health Organization. And so this is not something that you can joke with. And highest contributor to multidimensional poverty, that's there you have it, health, living conditions, and of course, education. Without education, even the Bible says that my people perish. So without education, you are living in a no man's land. I mean, you think you are doing the right thing, but you're actually endangering your life. So those are the figures for you. And these are things we take for granted. We are more interested in the diseases with, somebody would say, the World Bank English. But malaria and the rest. And just a while ago, we were talking about the clearing of goose at the Tema port and the fact that it's taking us 1 year to have them cleared. Even with the public function that came with it, only 14 out of the 185 were cleared, giving indication that in the days to come, we'll have to do more on this. So what are the issues and how do we go around the issues that we have on our hand? Dr. Florence Koyo Akumia is a cardiologist, fellow in training. Dr. Florence, you're welcome.
Thank you.
And of course, Dr. Nana Akosua Kunedu Dakun, family physician. Dr., you're welcome.
Thank you.
And of course, Christopher Agbega is a patient advocate. Chris, you're welcome.
Thank you very much.
All right. So let me start with you, Dr. Florence. The issues we are discussing, how bad is it?
In terms of, I am in the field of cardiology.
Right.
So I'll focus mainly on the cardiovascular diseases, and actually is the leading cause of death globally, and even more so in Africa and other lower and middle income countries. Mm-hmm. The prevalence has been steadily increasing. Like you said, we used to suffer more from malaria, infectious diseases, mm-hmm. but now we're actually plagued by a double burden where we have a high prevalence of these cardiovascular diseases and the infectious diseases, but we have not prioritized care, cardiovascular care in the country yet.
So if you can break it down for us, when you talk about cardiovascular disease, what disease are we talking about?
So if you break down the word cardiovascular, you're talking about the heart and the blood vessels. So by extension, also organs that are supplied by these blood vessels. So you have stroke falling under cardiovascular disease because it affects the blood vessels. Hypertension is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease, and there are several other risk factors which I'll talk about eventually. But we are talking about strokes, we are talking about heart attacks and blocked blood vessels to the heart. We're talking about what we call heart failure, where the heart is unable to perform its function well. We're talking about blocked vessels to the legs, where people develop wounds that don't heal, and many others.
All right, so let me come to you, your initial comments on this matter, Dr. Nana. What were your initial, your introductory remarks on the matters we are discussing this afternoon?
Like Florence said, the burden of, because she's a cardiologist,
right,
but the burden of non-communicable diseases in general is very high in Ghana and the world over, and it's highest for people in low and middle income countries. That's Ghana. Don't have money.
You don't, of course. We are, so, even struggling to clear containers at a
point. Exactly. So these are conditions that result from quite often unhealthy behaviors and unhealthy exposures. And in a way, you can do things to prevent them. And that's the important thing. You can make certain changes, adopt certain lifestyles that will help you to either prolong the time before you get the condition or prevent you from getting the condition at all. Or if you already have the condition, help you to manage the condition so that you live a full and healthy life that is not restricted. Yes.
We're going to break it up, but let me also bring in Chris. Chris, what's your story?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and also for the panel put together. My story is, it's been 17 years of living with a neurological condition, which is also an NCD. And for me, anytime, as a patient advocate, anytime I'm given the opportunity to speak, I try to broaden the scope for us to understand that there are key stakeholders responsible for the entire NCD prevention, treatment, care, and support space. So normally, yes, you hear lifestyle, it's true, but most of the time you'd realize that the regulations that are also needed to ensure that we have safer environments where, as a youth or as a young person, you can strive without having to, you know, fall into some of these things that have suddenly found its way into our environment. That is one of the key things that we need to talk about. For me, I know one of the issues is cost, because it took me 9 years to get my diagnosis from my first symptom. That was from 2007 to 2016. And as early as 2011, 2012, when the doctors finally said, okay, you need to carry out an MRI scan, and there was no money to do that, then you are now caught up in the loop of you having a condition with no diagnosis. You are now taking medications. You don't know for what reason, but then you are also trying to manage the condition as you go, until I finally got my diagnosis. And so I think that would be my opening statement for us to understand that when it comes to NCDs, there are multiple stakeholders involved in handling the issue of NCDs.
And the thing that almost half of all deaths recorded in Ghana is from NCDs.
Yeah.
I don't know who's going to take this. Why is it so?
I believe it's multifactorial.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one thing. He mentioned a few of the things. It takes so long for people sometimes to even get to know that they have the condition, sometimes through no fault of their own. For instance, he said he started experiencing symptoms and he kept reporting to the clinic, but they weren't able to get him a diagnosis, partly due to a funding issue. Okay, but there are some people, you may not even realize that you are having certain symptoms. So you are having those symptoms, but you are not aware that that's a problem. So you keep living your life until one day it gets so bad, it lands you in the hospital and they're like, oh, you have diabetes. Oh, you have this problem. Oh, you have that problem. Quite often, because we are not screening, we are...
People are not even taking medical tests.
Yes, early detection. Yes. So there are some conditions that once you hit a certain age, you should be screening.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have certain beliefs belief systems. Our belief systems around Tofia Kwa, you know, can't happen to me.
No, we'll spend our time at the church to pray.
You know, so our belief systems are also something that sometimes hamper the diagnosis process. Then when we do have a diagnosis, consistency and maintaining a management plan is sometimes difficult, because taking medication every day is not a simple thing. Again, it comes back to funds. Can you afford the medication?
There
are so many issues.
The church matters, I think that one can be classified under education.
Some very educated people will still come and tell you that.
I live with somebody who is very close, and she's always listening to the radio. Anytime you hear a medicine, the next thing you see, the person is going on the screen.
Exactly.
And I told her, you sent me to school, so you should start to allow me to educate you on some of this. And but she finds confidence in the things she hears on radio rather than going to the hospital and have the matter really checked.
Mm.
But when I also look at the rank, hypertension and the rest topped.
Yes.
Why is it so? And now I'm getting to even read about people in their 20s, early 30s, you know, being exposed to this. Is lifestyle the real issue, or there are more underlying issues that we are not aware of?
Okay. So I'll first speak to the fact about the more than half, or almost half, deaths are due to NCDs. Like it was said earlier, NCDs cover a whole spectrum of diseases, respiratory diseases, heart diseases, and the like, neurological diseases and the like. So definitely they will come together to form the bulk of the deaths that occur in the country.
Right.
And why is cardiovascular disease high, ranking high? Is being black is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease.
Being black.
Okay. Is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. Among other races, which also Asians also have high risk for cardiovascular disease. So that is one risk factor for it. And with our socioeconomic status and educational level, it's also difficult to finally come to a diagnosis. Like she said earlier, oftentimes you don't have symptoms of it. So you usually come with a complication of it. And once complications develop, they are one after the other, and oftentimes it's difficult to control. Now, being black, being hypertensive, usually the hypertension in blacks is more difficult.
Why is this? Is it because of the way
it's part of our genetic makeup, and we call something salt sensitivity. So we found that the hypertension in blacks is a salt sensitive hypertension. So, and that's why one of the major things we hammer on is the salt restriction, or taking less quantities of salt in as part of the lifestyle management of hypertension and other cardiovascular diseases. So it's just part of our genetic makeup and the how our hypertension happens, how it comes about. So treating it is different from treating a Caucasian.
Right.
And even when you're on treatment, getting it to target levels is even more difficult than a Caucasian.
Yeah.
So we are finding now that people are now getting hypertension at a younger age, mostly influenced by lifestyle, because we have been black all along. Mm-hmm. So there has been this westernization, changes in our diet, locomotion, so we don't walk much, we don't exercise much. There's increased stress. So chronic stress has also been found to be a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. So increasing stress, anxiety, depression, all these are on the rise.
Especially when you live in a capital city.
Yes. I mean, you wake up at 5 a.m. to beat traffic.
Right.
You sit, and yet still you sit in traffic.
Mm.
You get to work, you work, you leave around 4 or 5, sit in another traffic, get home, sort out things at home, go to bed. You would sleep 4-5 hours because you have to wake up early, get your kids ready, and it's a vicious cycle. You keep doing that over and over again without, if you don't intentionally plan for rest. So it's going to be a chronic state of stress, and that will predispose you.
But I don't think, I mean, adopting a healthy lifestyle is the only way out of this. I really don't think so.
You don't think adopting
I'm asking whether that should be the only way out. Or there are other things that one must do.
Okay, so it forms the basis of treatment of a lot of these non-communicable diseases and cardiovascular diseases. Lifestyle management is the basis, because if you consider the risk factors, so for cardiovascular diseases, you have hypertension, diabetes, high cholesterol, sedentary lifestyle, being obese, poor diet, those are the risk factors. Those ones are modifiable. So you realize that with your lifestyle, you can change the bulk of the risk factors for cardiovascular diseases. The other ones you can't do anything about are your age, because increasing age is associated with it. If you are black, if you are male, or if you're a postmenopausal woman, those ones you can't do anything about. If your family has a history of getting strokes and heart attacks, you can't do anything about. But you realize the list of modifiable ones is tall. So that's why we put a lot of emphasis on lifestyle. And there is treatment for the various risk factors. So hypertension, you have medications that you also take.
As I'm talking to you, the watch keeps telling me it is time for me to stand. So it tells you, I mean, how the kind of work we do, our daily activities also fuel some of these. Yeah. And I'll bring in Anna shortly, but I just want a quick response to this. And those who are battling hypertension, BP, hypertension, and all those issues, those who are on drugs, the complaints that has always come up. Some say that when they take it, it reduces their potency. Mm-hmm. They'll become impotent. And the reason why most people stay away from taking the drugs, even though when they've been put on it for life.
Yes, that's a problem we have. A lot of our male patients who are diagnosed 30s, middle-aged patients, they don't want to take the antihypertensives. Yes, some antihypertensives have been associated with erectile dysfunction. Mm-hmm. It is well known. But hypertension itself, its complications, blocking of the vessels, can also result in erectile dysfunction. So if you take the medications and you have erectile dysfunction, what we expect you to do is report to the doctor that this is what I have noticed.
Is there a medication that can reverse it?
There are alternatives.
When you are on BP medication.
So there are alternatives we can use if you experience that side effect. Mind you, not everybody will experience that side effect. So if you come and you report it, there are alternatives. We can try that. If we are out of options, then we give you something to counteract that erectile dysfunction effect while still being on the medication to control your blood pressure. Because without the medication, you may still end up with erectile dysfunction, or you may end up with a stroke and you won't be able to use...
And you will die.
Yes, you could die and you will still not be able to use the organ in the first place. So.
Right. Now, I mean, let's look at the Ghanaian general approach to his or her health. Mm-hmm. I mean, 2 days ago, I hosted somebody here. She has throat cancer. So she's lost her voice. She went through surgery and they gave her this artificial, you know, there's a tube that helped her to speak. And she said that she was having issues talking. And then she had swelling of the face. When she went to the hospital, she was diagnosed. But when she got to know of it, she had reached the fourth stage, or stage four, which a lot of people, according to her, had died because they didn't report on time. And I'm guessing this sits in the overall Ghanaian appreciation to his or her own health states and how readily they are ready to understand what is going on in their body and take remedial measures to correct it, if possible, and to live a healthy lifestyle. From what you've done, the education and everything around it, is the Ghanaian really ready to understand his health state and take the necessary steps going forward?
Thank you. I'd like to start this question from the fact that if you're talking about Ghanaian, then we'll look at not just the people, but our policies as well. So, yes, we have different levels of prevention. You want to put in policies that help people make right choices. Then you also want to educate people so that they know and have that power in knowledge. Like you said earlier, for lack of knowledge, my people perish.
Right.
You know, so when you have knowledge, it gives you a certain power. Then the next level is the fact that you want to have a screening program or early detection. So the cancers that you talked about elsewhere, and even in Ghana, there are screening times, optimum times for screening for various non-communicable diseases, so for hypertension, ideally anybody above 18,
you should be having
checking your blood pressure when you come into our clinic. For your blood sugar, it's same, but like you said, these days we are seeing certain things a lot earlier. Okay, for cancers, depending on the type of cancer, some people may start in their 30s, some people may start in their 40s, some screenings will start later. And then you have those who have the condition and are presenting with some complication of the condition. So catching it at that stage when they are having symptoms or complications and trying to manage the condition, like what happened with your friend. She came in at stage 4, so it started and it's gotten to the end of the road.
Even when the signs were clear, she was taking antibiotics and all the, thinking that it was something else and not cancer.
Exactly. So I'm coming to that. So there are different levels of prevention. For we as a Ghanaian community, sometimes the decision to go to the hospital to see your healthcare provider is modulated by quite a few factors. One, money. We'll keep coming to the fact that people don't have money. So to pick a car to the clinic, payment at the clinic, I don't have money. So I'll
look some are also not covered by the National Health Insurance.
Exactly. So I'll go to my local chemical shop, local pharmacy, buy a drug. And I'll keep buying that drug until I have some kind of very bad complication and I have to present to the clinic. Okay? At other times, it's about our belief systems that sometimes hold us back from going to the clinic. You know, in our homes, when you come up with a symptom, you have 1,001.
Everybody, diagnosing you, giving you all manner of.
Exactly. You know. So then you are being told, okay, do this, do that. There's a local herb, there's this or there's that, that can treat it.
Not tested, though.
For you. Yes. And sometimes. Her kind, your friend's condition, I'm happy you spoke about that in particular. The number of ENT surgeons that we have in the country, I mean, I'm sure you can count them.
Right.
We don't have that many. Our workforce is not that large, and you would find most of them here in Accra. So if you are in a village somewhere, you only have the most basic clinical workforce, by the time you get to Accra,
the situation is already
far gone. So you are talking about issues with access, you are talking about issues with finance, you are talking about our belief systems. These are three major things that come into play when it comes to diagnosis of non-communicable.
So Chris, the advocacy you are embarking on, which direction is it taking?
Thank you so much. So it's multifaceted. One is to train persons living with NCDs to be their own voices. For us, we believe that the more people are brought into the fold to understand, first of all, what the issues are, and then how to also communicate the issues, and to the goal, which is to cause change within policy and also within our, you know, our system in general, is one of my main things. I've been working with the NCD Alliance for the last 6 to 7 years, train people both in Ghana and people out of Ghana to be voices across the world. And so that is what we have done so far in the country. Also to speak to policymakers. We've had meetings with the Parliamentary Select Committee on Health, because if you look at what happened during COVID, where it was said that persons with underlying health conditions were at risk of contracting COVID-19. You have a lot of panic running through the NCD community because for them, one little thing could trigger, you know, a complication that could lead and, you know, into a worse situation. And so for advocacy, it is ensuring that persons living with NCDs are well-informed, are knowledgeable of the policies that even are in place, are also well aware of the lifestyle changes that they need to also adopt in order for them to have that life they want to live, even though they may be taking medications and sometimes it leads into mental health complications as well, to ensure that they are functioning as normal human beings within the society. But one of the things I also wanted to add to what Doctor said was, you know, the decline in health promotion is one of the things that has kind of found its way into affecting that number we are seeing, 43%. Mm. You remember some 10, 15 years ago, we had just one campaign that talked about Akola Okohen, right? It was everywhere.
Right.
And it had this resounding effect in our lives growing up. And we knew what it meant. Though it was more of an animation, we knew what it meant. We embraced it. We loved it. And it had a positive effect on the youth within that particular, you know, time frame where they understood what the issue was, which was being communicated.
And you're thinking that it's not being done now?
It's not being done now. It's not being done now. And what we are seeing most of the time is for media, especially within the media space, sometimes I think it's a conflict of, you know, your sponsors, and then you putting some of these things out, and it looks like maybe you are biting the hands that are feeding you, but there is no intentionality with regards to health promotion, and that is one of the key problems that we see. I can go on.
Let me just ask now whether the health ministry doesn't have budget for promotions. Is that really the case?
Health promotion is a major aspect of the Ministry of Health, the Ghana Health Service, the various aspects of the Ministry of Health. I believe what he's pointing to is that you can't point to any
sustained
advert
promotion
or media promotion program that, like you said, Akalawo Kohe. As soon as you said that, we don't have that. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's what he's talking to. Not necessarily that there's no health promotion going on. Clinics, hospitals are doing health promotion every day, all the time. But that kind of catchy things that would help you to recall. There's something he said that is very important. Mm-hmm. Self-management,
right.
Self-advocacy. I am a member of the group for which I'm here, the Create Ghana Research Group. We are funded by the NIHR, and we are involved in self-management education for persons with some cardiovascular conditions, as well as diabetes and, you know, other non-communicable diseases. Not all of them, but some of them. And a big part of that is self-management, empowering the client, empowering the person with the condition to be able to take their own decisions. Because, to be honest, when you go to the hospital, how long are you in there with the doctor or whichever healthcare provider?
Few minutes.
Even if it's 30 minutes. It's still 30 minutes of a 24-hour day. When you leave, every choice you make after that is yours. So if the person is empowered to know and make the right choices, she talked about all the risk factors involved. Right. And the risk factors that she talked about, they are the same across. For most of
the... In fact, I will not cut you, but so this afternoon we're having the newsroom discussion about the throat cancer, and then we wanted to understand the risk factors, and then the issue of alcohol came, those who are drinking hard liquor, the issue of oral sex came, and you can imagine the debate that it brought about. So, I mean, people just run away from things that are so clear to them because of their own personal feelings here and there. But I just want to come to Florence and to ask. So, Chris kept using the word if you are an NCD patient,
persons living with NCD,
is the tag good, knowing very well how tags can be a tool for discrimination in this country? Is it somebody is living with HIV? Nobody want to get close to that person.
So I think that's the current approach. So you are living with the condition and you're not being defined by the condition.
Okay.
So that is why we call it persons living with an NCD. If you have this HIV, it's persons living with HIV, AIDS, and all those things. Because you're not defined by the condition. Because oftentimes we call you diabetic, and you are defined by it for the rest of your life. And sometimes people look at you like you are incapacitated. You may miss out on opportunities just because of that label. But then if you know that it's just something you're living with, you'll be motivated to cope with it, find coping strategies, and maybe be more compliant with your treatment. And back to the issue about promotion, health promotion. I totally agree that we have really rested on our oars, and we used to do more with health promotion when we didn't even have the vehicles we have now. We have social media now. We have so many avenues we can do. Various health organizations and societies, like for the Ghanaian Society of Cardiology, we do some health promotion. Diabetes, DEMSOG does health promotion. So there are World Health Days marking various conditions. Then neurologists will mark stroke, cardiologists. Next month is May Measurement Month. We go around media agencies trying to raise awareness about hypertension, getting people to check their blood pressure, and even organizing screening for that. But yes, we need a national and concerted effort. Right. If we have a national health promotion project, they could send a message far, because realize that sometimes all these efforts remain within the cities and they don't go far. Yeah, nurses used to, in the OPD, give education before you see the doctor. Now, that has all dwindled away. So we really need to revamp our health promotion.
Chris, want to come in?
You said something so significant. I just want to touch on that, about the tags that come with living with a condition. It is actually known in history that in the 80s, the HIV and AIDS community, when they adopted the person-centered approach, where the persons living with a condition were now the ones speaking, we're now the ones, you know, leading the conversation. It is what we are now seeing, the effects we are seeing today, that stigmatization and discrimination has drastically gone down when it comes to HIV.
And that was after they had realized that the initial awareness creation was wrong when they tagged people who were living with as, you know, devilish and all those.
Exactly.
They had to revive the strategy.
Exactly. So now within the NCD community, we've developed that same approach. Recently, the WHO released the global... when we talk about meaningful involvement, putting persons living with a condition at the forefront of the discussion, making sure they are meaningfully involved, like what Joy is doing right now, that I am also part of the conversation and not an afterthought, so that when it comes to discrimination, issues of stigmatization, we are fighting that every day, and it's still ongoing. You have people living with NCDs in some of the communities who people don't want to associate with because of, you know, quote and unquote, maybe if I go close to this person, whatever condition they have, I may have the same. But we have adopted that same approach that was adopted in the 80s by the HIV and AIDS because they were successful. And that is what we also want to do now. We want to be successful. That's why you find somebody like me, you find other people within the NCD community leading the conversation. When we go for advocacy campaigns, you don't find a person without a condition
being part of it.
You find us leading.
And how has that helped in terms of the awareness creation?
It has drastically helped, especially in the trainings. When somebody can relate with you that you're a person living with a condition, then they want to listen to what you have to say. And most of the time, we understand what it means to live with a condition. Look, I've not used the NHIS in a very long time because I know how the disease burden increases. And when you go to the hospitals, you are basically paying out of pocket with regards to your medications, with regards to, you know, your check-ins and all of that. And so we know what it means to live with a condition. We know what we had to even go through during COVID. And who best speak to the issue than us who live with a condition every day of our lives?
I think it's good. And I just want to come so that we can look at the way forward as we go. And personally, I appreciated my health very much when in February, I woke up and walking was difficult because I was having so much pain from my right leg all the way down. And then when I went to the hospital, I was taken through a thing. There was a process and then MRI. Mm. And then the conclusion was that they call this sciatica. It's been very painful. And I've taken a lot of things for granted. But what that thing taught me, that I came to realize that I should be periodic in terms of understanding my body and what it wants. So now going forward, what should be the approach and what will be, what are the takeaways that those who are watching us should take from this conversation in terms of their own health outlook?
Okay. So firstly, I believe from the beginning, we've not really defined non-communicable disease for your audience.
I think we can do that now.
So non-communicable diseases, they are a group of diseases that, when we say communicable, it means that I can give it to you. So infectious diseases, so COVID, let's say HIV, TB, if I do something, I can give the condition to, even cough, cold. I can cough on you and the whole room will have a cold by next week or next 2 weeks. Okay, but non-communicable diseases are diseases that, if I have it, I can't give it to you.
You can't transfer.
So then that brings us to what we've been discussing all this time. It's not something you can transfer. He talked about something that led me to this, that sometimes people will stigmatize you sometimes because they don't understand it and think that they can pick it from you. So if you have hypertension and I may associate with you, or diabetes or a cancer or a neurological problem, if I associate with you in some way, somehow, I can also have it. The way forward, again, he touched on it, empowering the patient, empowering the person living with disease. Yes, we are the theory experts, so to speak, and they are the reality experts.
Yes.
Okay. Usually, managing a condition should be individualized and personalized. What you do for Amma is not what you would do for Kofi, because they don't have the same circumstances. But all people living with non-communicable diseases, one of the things that you want to look at is management of risk factors. The modifiable ones that Dr. Spoke about, you know, the salt. We love salt. Kobe, Tolo beef, and all the Kominines. We love it. We put it in our
food. That's one they call salted beef.
Salted, yes, that's Tolo beef. Sorry. Salted beef, salted pork, all the good things that we like to put in our meals. The oils, the palm oil that we drizzle on our food. So we are looking at our salt intake. We are looking at our choice of food. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to stop taking certain things. Again, it's individualized. But you must know what the food is doing to you when you eat it. Mm-hmm. So that when you are eating it, you know that I'm sure I can't say brand names, can I? So this flavoring that I'm adding to my food, this salted flavoring, that the spices that I'm adding to my food, now I know that it can affect my heart. It can make my hypertension more difficult to control. So it's tasty, but do I really want to take it?
So it is a too much of it, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, it's not just some of them taking it at all.
Zero.
Yes. Ideally, it should be zero. Again, it comes back to individualized. You look at all the risk factors and what the person you are looking at, patient-centered care, what their life is. Because if you tell somebody eat vegetables, the person can't afford vegetables. The person eats banku and raw pepper a day, and you are telling the person eats cabbage, eat this, eat that.
A friend of mine was on that, and then 2 days said he was having nightmares. And so she couldn't go ahead eating the vegetables.
However, there are options. Maybe they are thinking of lettuce, cucumber, this, that. But we eat okra, we eat contomery, we eat garden eggs. We have our own local options. We drink light soup. So these are options that we can give. So depending on who is sitting in front of you, the education may be different. Okay, then you come to talk about smoking, alcohol, managing your weight, managing stress. Across Stay By Plan, you talked about it. You know, you are so stressed all the time. You get home, you are stretched. Sleep is also something. So modifying these risk factors, empowering the person sitting in front of you, that patient-centered care, that person living with the condition, giving them a management plan that works for them, that they can maintain and sustain, that is the important thing. Remaining consistent will give them the outcomes and the results that allow them to live a full life.
Right.
Yeah.
Dr. Florence, the way forward.
So she's talking about risk factor control. I'm going to talk about health financing. We need to have a look at how health financing is in the country, whether we need to review the NHIS and see how we can best
save. But it's about time.
The population.
And it only comes into the picture when there's a public outcry.
Yeah.
The last time there was those who have kidney issues, and all of a sudden there's a discussion as to whether the NHIS should take it.
So we need to really look into health finance. And then the Ghanaian must take responsibility for their health, and especially health finances. We know that the NHIS doesn't cover everything. Rarely do you find people putting funds aside for health. So if you do not put funds aside for health and you have an incident, then you're found wanting. You cannot afford it in the moment. It will take you years to either come to a diagnosis or even get intervention that you need. For instance, if you get a heart attack right now, and the main treatment is to open up the vessel for you, you need to have at least $3,500.
$3,500.
Or the CD equivalent of that.
That's right? Like 50,000 Ghana cedis.
Exactly. If you haven't saved, you do not have any form of health insurance that is going to cover for that. Yeah. You cannot afford this service.
You can't, unless you adopt the Bima.
So what it says is that you won't get it. And if you don't get it, most likely you're going to develop complications like heart failure, shortening your lifespan, shortening, like worsening the quality of your life. So those are the things we are looking at. Ghanaians must...
And so the review is very important.
The review
elsewhere,
is important.
The NHS is... Yes. One of the biggest entities you'll find in the UK and the US as well.
Yes.
But in our case, there's selectivity in the way the scheme applies in terms of the ailments that it covers. It's not wholesale.
Yes, it's not. So we need to review that, and we also need to prepare ourselves for that. And then we also need to decentralize healthcare. So I think the Ghana College is doing well, West African College. You're training a lot of specialists. So how do we decentralize, send them to the various regional hospitals, send them to the various district hospitals so that people can get access to them? Because someone doesn't want to come to Kwalebu because I'll come and wait in the queue for 5 hours before I'm seen. So we need to find a way to decentralize and then make health more accessible to the patients.
Tomorrow is Saturday. I'm sure you will find a lot of people going up the mountains. So many of them. When they descend, what should they do?
When they descend,
when they go
mountain.
Up and they descend, what?
Okay, so it's very good to go up the mountain and come down. When you descend and you have had your healthy meal and everything, try and make time during the week to go and see a doctor. Let them check you out. Let them see if you are even fit to climb that mountain. Because you could climb and get to the summit of it and have a heart attack and die. So go and see your doctor. Have a routine medical checkup, something you should do annually. Let them check your blood pressure, your blood glucose, your cholesterol, your weight, your height, tell you your BMI, and give you advice as to how to maintain or even improve your health. Then you can go ahead and do your walks and all the other things that you enjoy doing.
Chris, you have the final word.
Once again, I would want to say thank you for the opportunity. For me, health literacy, first of all, is important. Health literacy for all. Everybody needs to understand the increased burden of NCDs in the country. 43% is alarming. That is half of all deaths. We don't want to turn Ghana into a graveyard of NCD patients or persons living with NCDs, where that is all we see every day. Health literacy. Unfortunately, if you see the influx of new pro-NCD products in our market, it is no surprise that the youth are the ones that are at the receiving end of these. Now, you have all these e-cigarettes that are so attractive. And unfortunately, it's targeting most of the females, and you see them, and it looks fancy. But you are looking fancy, leading your way onto death, unfortunately. And so health literacy is important, is key. Government must also absorb NCD treatments, the cost of it. It's expensive. She mentioned an amount that you know that you can work 2, 3, 4, 5 years. You wouldn't arrive at that amount.
Well, somebody is a lifetime your revenue.
Exactly. And so you are choosing between that and health that you are not too sure about you'd even make it out of. You understand? That is where we are, which is unfortunate. So for me, I think that we need to come together. We need to understand that, look, as a person living with NCD, it is a burden. Stigmatization, it's wrong. You understand, and we'll continually fight this. Meaningful involvement is key. Also, I want to thank Joy Prime for putting me on this panel. This shouldn't be the end. You'd want to see
Joy News,
thank you. You'd want to see a lot more persons living with NCDs leading the conversation so that people will understand what it means. You understand? I don't want anybody to sit in a wheelchair. I know what, in an inaccessible country as Ghana,
right.
The last thing I want is for somebody to sit in a wheelchair. You understand? Because it is difficult. I wasn't born like this. I used to run, live my life, play football. Who knows? Maybe I could have been one of the best black star players.
Yeah.
I am speaking on health. So you shouldn't get to this point before you realize you made wrong decisions. Right? And so health literacy is important. Thank you so much.
I'd like to thank you so much for coming through this afternoon. And of course, Dr. Florence Koyo Akumia, cardiology fellow in training Dr. Nana Akosua Akunedudakun, family physician, of course, Christopher Abringa, patient's advocate. We've been discussing non-communicable diseases, and of course the discussion will go on. Hopefully we'll bring them back to evaluate what we've done so far and whether or not it's making any impact out there. This is The Pulse. We'll take a short break. We shall be back. And then we'll take you to the election headquarters. Welcome back to The Pulse here on Joy News. Of course, this is your election headquarters, and we are counting down to December 7th, 2024, where we'll have another opportunity to elect a president and 275 members of parliament. Now, some traders in the Ashanti and Ahafo regions are proposing the choice of a female running mate for the New Patriotic Party in the 2024 general elections. They believe such a choice will improve the party's chances of breaking the eight, as well as improving female participation in politics. The market women at a news conference also emphasized the need to choose a female from the Ashanti region for the ticket. Nanaya Ojima has more in this report.
Speculation over who partners Dr. Mahamud Bawumia for the presidential election continues to gather momentum. Many in the Ashanti region are expecting the choice to be made from the region. Market women from major markets in the Ashanti and Bono regions are the latest to point out their expected qualities. They believe it is about time a woman is chosen to complement the vice president for the election. If the NDC has chosen a woman, the NPP must do same. We want a woman from the Ashanti region, someone with the interests of women at heart. Already, some of them have shown lots of love to we traders. We want a woman with genuine intentions about us. If they refuse to give us a woman, we will not vote the NPP. We will consider other options. Women are very knowledgeable. Even the traders here, we are able to trade for profit every time. See how our market queen is managing things here. It shows how knowledgeable we are. We have love for the NPP and also vote them, but this time we want them to put a woman on their tickets. To them, the appointment of some women to high office in the government by the Nana Akufo-Addo-led administration is evident of their willingness to ensure gender equality, emphasizing their belief in the party's ability to redeem the country from economic challenges. They want their proposal to be given a careful consideration. For Joy News, Nanaya Ojima, Kumasi.
And we will stay in the Ashanti region for a little longer, because the former member of parliament for Ejoso constituency, Kwabena Owusu-Edeomi, has announced his intention to contest the upcoming by-election as an independent candidate. The declaration comes a day ahead of the New Patriotic Party's parliamentary primary to elect a candidate for the upcoming by-election. A press statement from the camp of the former MP attributes the decision to sever ties with the MPP to what he claims to be the reluctance of the party to deal with crucial concerns with the voter album. It further points to flaws in the election process for pooling station executives, claiming the deceased MP, with the help of the regional party executive, handpicked some persons for key positions. Nana Osei Bonsu is campaign aide of the former MP.
The pooling station executive in elections in Ejosho was not done in accordance with what the general practice has been. We woke up one early morning to the news that people had been selected to fill police station executive positions. We protested, but the party would simply not hear or give us hearing. And so the matter eventually found its way into court. And as we speak, the issue is still pending. And so it is surprising that the party has not made any effort to reconcile the aggrieved members of it, but then proceeding to conduct primaries when they know that there are pertinent issues to be addressed. This decision is even in response to calls by constituents. If you even come here and conduct an opinion poll, you find out that almost everybody is calling for a comeback. And so it is in response to that call. So we are more than confident. We have an exceeding confidence that we win this election.
So as it stands, there's no relationship at all with the New Patriotic Party?
Exactly. He's contesting on an independent ticket.
Okay.
The schedule for election has been released. Now the process is still ongoing. I think nomination forms will be filed from next week. I think from 16th or so. I'm not too sure with the. But for now, we are doing the paperwork. We hit the ground running very soon.
And remember, the Ejosho MPP parliamentary primary is coming off tomorrow, Saturday, April 13th, and we have live coverage for you there. The former GFA president, Kojin Entechi, and eight others are battling it out for the only slot available in the MPP. But let's stay on politics, because the minority in parliament is already wading into the newly launched performance tracker. A member of the Public Accounts Committee and member of parliament for Buin in the Oti region, Kofi Adams, says a side of the house will be demanding an independent probe into the performance tracker, which was supposed to give account on verified projects. He also claims that government has paid some contractors when their own tracker review work is not complete.
We will go into them. Just maybe monies have been paid behind the scene for no work done, and we are incurring a lot of costs where we can't feel it on the ground. So when you hear that our debt has risen, but we look around us and we can see the development, what may be happening is that MPP officials are paying monies to themselves for no work done.
So is that to suggest that in Parliament you'll be asking the Speaker to probe some of these claims that government?
Sure, we will be asking for a lot of things to be probed. Based on what has happened at Public Accounts Committee, where we found these heavy and huge payments for no work done, we will be asking for a lot more things to be probed, especially projects they have declared percentage completion, when we know on the ground that no such thing have happened. We have to follow the funding source and to find out how much has been paid the contractor or claimed to have been paid to the contractor.
How about the claim that the platform can be updated? It's a live platform. So
well, we were told that they have placed only verified projects with geolocation. So it means we have ministers who cannot be trusted. We have ministers who can lie out there. We have ministers whose words we must not take serious, because that is what we were told, that verified, that the projects have been 13,000 projects verified with geolocation. So how come something verified now happens not to be what is it? So who did the verification? Or what is the meaning of verified project? Unless it has a different meaning for MPP people, we have to teach them a lesson this year. Then they will know that Ghanaians are no fools.
And very finally, they are comparing this to the Green Book and the fact that the Green Book was filled with deception as compared to this.
Till now, they have not been able to pinpoint anything in the Green Book that is false. But we have been able to pinpoint the 2020 delivery tracker and now 2024 performance tracker, all the deceptions in them. They should pick the Green Book. Is a book. We knew that what we were placing in there were genuine projects. It's not for anyone to go and say, I'll go and update the book. It is liars who do that. Or they put something and tell you that, oh, I'll keep updating. Why do you think that when you go to school and you are presenting your project, they don't accept just a soft copy? Because they want you to have a right. You have to print it, publish it for them to hold it, to see a solid copy, so that you cannot go around and then be changing it later.
And now to some other stories now. And a 28-year-old Bogatanga biker who is now on a cycling expedition to Accra says three key factors inspired him to embark on the journey. James Kumbini advocates for green mobility, particularly the usage of bicycles, which have no detrimental influence on the environment. He says engaging individuals on a trip to Kumasi and their reaction provided him a picture of how uninformed people are about climate change and the need to educate and sensitize Ghanaians about the phenomenon impact. Mahmoud Mohamed Nuruddin spoke with James after the crew arrived in Kumasi.
In 3 days, James has already covered over 540 kilometers from Bolga to Kumasi. Today, Thursday, he would begin the remaining journey from Kumasi to Accra, which is about 250 kilometers. Considering the distance covered by James so far, you should be seeing him in Accra latest by Friday. But let's engage James about the challenges, great moments, and the lovely people he met on his way to Kumasi. We would also talk about environmental sustainability. What inspired you to embark on this challenging journey of riding bicycle from Bolga to Accra?
You use your bicycle. Your bicycle doesn't really produce any carbon emissions. So I said, no problem. Let me actually use my bicycle to actually promote it as an alternative means of transport. So if I promote it as alternative means of transport, we are shifting towards green transportation. And if we actually move to green transportation, what it means is that we are actually going to reduce carbon emissions in the atmosphere. And in the long term, we are also trying to control climate change, which is now a very big problem. So with all these, I said, I need to do something. I have to protect the environment. It's very important. So this is the major thing that actually sets me off to this journey. But aside that, there's someone called Joel Atinga. Joel Atinga is actually embarking on a Guinness World Record attempt in Accra. Yes, he's very young like I am here. So the thing is, how can I also support other people? How can you support the young ones who are growing? As young as I am, if I need support, I would want people to. So if he also needs support, we would have to support him in whichever way. So I also said, let me use this, my trip, to also throw my support for him. That is to encourage him to also do well. If he does well, he puts the whole of Ghana on the map for us. You know, if he promotes kebab, that's what we have here. In fact, we are going to boost tourism. So all this, we are putting Ghana on the map. So with this, my trip, I decided to throw support for him. Aside that too, since I am actually promoting bicycles as alternative means of transport, that is looking at green transportation to reduce carbon emissions and reduce or to actually handle or tackle the climate change issue, I also talked about safety for cyclists. Yes, we actually share the road. Yes, and also one thing is that the roads are not really friendly to cyclists. Yes, it's like we cyclists were not really considered when they were constructing these roads. So with this, my trip, I'm also trying to send a message across that cyclists need to be protected. We need to be safe. We shouldn't be knocked down just because we are using bicycles. And the roads too shouldn't just be constructed for just some other road users. When they are constructing the road, whatever they are doing, they should also consider cycling.
So let's look at the challenges that you faced along the way and how did you overcome them?
Vehicular smokes. It was a big challenge for me. When they are passing by, the smoke alone would want you to either stop somewhere else or to pedal faster and pass them, which is actually, in fact, this particular challenge gave me motivation to even pedal harder because it's one of the things I'm trying to reduce. Yeah, so one thing is the smoke from vehicles were really not good at all for me. Very important. And also one thing is drivers really were not really paying attention to cyclists. You see, you're on the road that's just at the edges and you see a driver just drive by you. So if the car mistakenly touches you, you're off. You know, you are knocked down somewhere. So one challenge is how other road users were not really friendly to me on the road. Yes. How did I overcome this? So when I see a vehicle coming, I just move. I get up the road. Yes, I just get up the road a bit. And they pass and then I take the main road. I actually came with a road bike. It's not a mountain bike or a gravel bike. Those bikes are just meant for the tarred road. So if you are just off the road that's in the sun, you can actually fall. So whatever it is, I would still have to get back to the main road to ride.
When you were coming, did you notice any difference in the challenges faced by people along the communities that you passed through?
I saw some women and children actually carrying water along the roadside. They were actually in a queue. They were moving like in a queue form. So one thing that came to my mind was they don't really have drinking water, so they have to go somewhere else to fetch the water. So it's one challenge I also, community problem I actually observed when I was moving.
What advice would you give to others considering embarking on a similar journey or seeking to push this your own physical and mental limits?
Yeah, there are a whole lot of issues that we can all solve, and with the bicycle I know we can use it to make a whole lot of changes in society. Yeah, so for anyone who wants to embark on an adventure like this, I would actually advise a person to do it and do it very well. Yes, there's no need saying the distance is far. As long as whatever you are going to do is going to benefit people and benefit community, you may suffer a little bit on the road, but it's not going to be forever. I'm doing 5 days on the road. After 5 days, I'm done riding. Yes, so anyone who wants to actually embark on a trip like this, I would advise the person to actually take a problem like I have done and also see how the person can use his cycling to actually solve the problem, because what I believe is that cycling can solve a whole lot of issues. Mm. It's not just riding to benefit you yourself alone, but when you ride too, you benefit others. There are times that you ride and people are interested and you introduce them to it and also get a benefit. So you see that it's not just directly on you yourself, but the society. If we are able to reduce these carbon emissions, which I know it will, what will happen is a whole general benefit for everybody. Mm. So anyone who wants to actually embark on something like this, I would advise a person to pick one issue in the community, in the society, and actually go hard on it, because the issues are many and one person cannot solve all. We must all come on board. So anyone, anywhere who wants to actually embark on a cycling trip to promote something like this or something different, I would actually advise the person to do it and do it very well, because we need it now.
Okay. So looking back on your journey from Bolga, what lessons or insights have you gained about yourself, Ghana, and the human spirit capacity for resilience and adventure?
So one thing I've learned is that people don't know. I think information still needs to be sent out to everybody, because sometimes we talk about, when I meet others and then I'm telling them what I'm doing and the benefits it will bring, they think like once I'm riding I'm getting it on just on me. So one thing is that,
right, so James is riding all the way from Bogatanga in the Upper East region to the Greater Accra region. And according to our checks, he's expected to touch base in Accra by the close of today, Friday, and this is phenomenal. This is I want to congratulate him for this journey. This is what we should be aiming for in the Guinness Book of Records, not some other things. But that's our show for today. For more stories, log on to our website, myjoyonline.com. Stories, Gavin admits 67 mistakes, entries in performance tracker. There's this Nigerian called Bob Risky. He was arrested. He was asked about his sex. He says he's a male and he's been jailed 6 months. Mawa and Atreba family to issue a statement to her, and may her soul rest in perfect peace. My name is Elton Groby. Whatever you are up to in the hours and in the weekend ahead, I hope it's profitable. Have a good weekend. We'll be back Monday with another exciting edition. Good evening.